Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday, January 31st, 2021. I'm Larry Rhodes, or Doubter 5, and as usual, we have our co-host on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
Listen, I can't kill anyone. I can't make you fall in love with anybody or anyone fall in love with you. And no wishing for more wishes.
No wishes. No, I'm going to do that.
Those are my three rules.
Yeah. Our guests today are Doubtfire, George, Boudreaux, J.W. Kennedy, and Buffalo. Hello, Buffalo. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, and humanism and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there was a streaming call-in atheist video show broadcasting here from Knoxville? Did you know that, Wombat?
Exactly. I'm glad someone's finally talking about it, because that's how they're putting the microchips in the vaccines. And if you look really close, you can see everyone's in on it. It's all a conspiracy. We got to do something about this, guys. I'm serious. My Twitter account got blocked. Never mind. We're good. Oh, Larry, you're on mute again. Anyway, as Larry figures out his audio issues, you're on mute, my buddy.
If you would like to interact with us during the show, go to Facebook and search for Digital Free Thought Radio Hour page. Use the messaging function to send us questions or comments. What's your topic today, Wombat?
Hey, today we're talking about cultural hijacking. We got a full stack of people on the show today. I want to do what my favorite thing is every episode to do, if we can do it, if we have enough time for it. And that's a quick, super, super fast, super, super check-in. How you doing? Life story update since last week. Scott, how you been?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. I got more pieces. Hold on a second.
Show me the cool stuff. Show me the buttons. He's setting up a whole home studio.
Yeah. So this is the latest one.
Okay. Whoa, that is a cool looking thing.
That's a cool one, huh?
That's a cool looking one.
Yes, sir. Yeah, so we've been just building and building and building. So
hey, and we're looking forward to playing your music during the break too. Yeah?
Yeah.
Here we buttons. Go. Boudreaux, I know you got something in your arm too. You're looking forward to another blast of antigen. What's going on?
I'm signed up for number two on Thursday, and it's I'd like to say it's a blessing. I feel really, really grateful. I got pushed up in the line, I think really just for testing purposes. But sure. But since Scott's shown off his cool stuff, I've had this up for a while, but now you guys can see it in the camera. I have a shelf on the drop ceiling in my basement so that I can put things up there when I'm on the elliptical. I might be the only person that has a shelf just way up on a drop ceiling.
Fair enough. That's pretty cool. Nice. That's your cool stuff. Buffalo, good to see you again. You're all decked out in the Buffalo gear. Nice to see it. How you been since last week?
I've been fine. I get my second dose on Wednesday.
Nice. Yeah. So that doesn't mean you're immune, right? Like, you still have to wait a couple of weeks, and it just greatly reduces your chances of getting sick or like actually having it be a big deal. It doesn't make you bulletproof or make you a better driver, all that stuff, right?
Is that accurate? It certainly does not in my mind. And I probably will never know unless I get tested for antibody titer.
Okay. Very, very cool.
But it doesn't matter. I still follow the other rules strictly and try to do my part and move toward herd immunity.
Nice. Thank you for doing your part. Also, weird question. I'm just going to take a weird backseat. You got that shot on your arm, Eric. Has that affected your drum playing at all? Like,
Good question. But no.
Any soreness? Not
really. No. Volleyball and drumming.
Volleyball. Okay.
Yeah. No, but I am going to go rock climbing on Friday. I'll let you know how that goes next week.
Yeah. Yep. That's going to be an interesting thing. That's more of a mental thing anyway, though. JW, it's been forever since we'd seen you on the show. You're looking great in that blazer. How you been?
Thank you. I've been all right. Just moving right along. Living life. I had COVID back in November. And I think it's been since before November, since I've been on the show.
Yeah, you've been out for a while. You've been sick. We're glad you survived. Also, you have various degrees of camouflage going on right now. Like, I can't see your forehead. viewers will know that he's wearing.
Yeah,
like
it's just a camouflage. Can't just
but,
a camo, yeah.
But he's got the professor blazer on at the same time too. So like, there's so many messages going on here. It's
I just threw it on. I thought it would look better than just a black t-shirt. But, I'm the guy who eats pizza for breakfast, so just don't be impressed.
There's nothing wrong with pizza for breakfast. First of all, that's blasphemy. Yeah, you should totally eat breakfast pizza for breakfast.
So, Larry, JW, did you wait it out at home?
Yes. I have three roommates, and not a single one of them got it.
Nice. Very good. Very good.
I quarantined immediately once I had a fever that Sunday morning. I had actually cleaned the apartment the day before. Just out of it was cleaning day anyway. And so once I had the fever, I notified everybody immediately, quarantined. And then I didn't find out until Tuesday afternoon that I had it, but I had already been quarantining for 3 days. And then I finished out the quarantine, had some people I know deliver me some things. So I still plan on getting the vaccine as well.
Nice. Good. So, speaking of that, Larry, when are you going to get yourself in line? You know you qualify. What's going on with you, man?
I don't really. According to the Knox County guidelines, I'm 1AC, something like that. 1A3. Okay. Anyway, they're only doing people with hard medical problems or first responders or people over 75. I'm only 70.
So. Oh, my gosh. Listen, I know in your past you have a history of sneaking into bars and being like, "One for me, please. I got this."
No, I've signed up through the VA, and I'm just gonna stay home until they call me in.
Okay,
it shouldn't be too long.
Okay.
But good, staying safe, playing computer games.
Yeah. Nice. I've been holding up too, and I'm looking forward to the topic today as well. The topic of today is cultural hijacking. The reason why I want to bring it up. We had a guest on the show last week. His name was Elmo, and he was from the Philippines, and he was talking about Christianity and how much it meant to him. Towards the end of the show, maybe even after we had ended the interview, we had talked about some of like the native gods of the Philippines, and he knew a lot of them. And Larry, you made the point that like if Catholicism hadn't found the Philippines, he would probably be telling us about those gods rather than the Christian god.
Right.
And that was such a eye-opening little thing in my head because I thought, man, you could say the same thing for black culture because I can't name any black kings. I can't name any black gods. I can't name anything from like really Africa. But even America can't name anything from Native American culture. Like we don't know any great Native American chiefs or political leaders before the pilgrims came. Like that's just been all lost. The culture had been hijacked on top of being hijacked, on top of it being hijacked. And even
just
today,
pure history too. Like I'm Scott Irish. I was making the point before the show. I don't know hardly anything about Scott Irish history, but I certainly know Jewish history because I was raised Christian.
Exactly.
So, I mean, studying the Bible, you study the Jewish people's history.
Yeah, you don't know William Wallace, but you know Ezekiel and Jesus, right?
Right. And basically, religion has hijacked my sense of history.
Hmm. Scott, you were weighing on this before. What were you making a point about?
Yeah, I was going to say, I was actually speaking to somebody earlier this week who was saying that they know Christianity must be true because our whole dating system is based on Christianity. So it's like, it's 2021, but 2021 since when? Since the birth of Jesus. So that just proves it's true.
So the Chinese calendar proves that the dragon god is real too.
Exactly. Yeah. So we mentioned the Chinese calendar, and I was telling them all the
Jewish
that,
calendar.
Jewish calendar. Yeah.
Well, science has adjusted to that because they don't say AD anymore. They say BCE before the current.
Yeah, and it's funny that we would name the weekdays after other gods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a Georgian calendar with gods named after the Roman gods, like from Saturday all the way to Sunday. Saturday and Sunday actually are pagan gods, the sun and the moon, right? We did a show on this before, but like Monday all the way through Friday are like obviously Frida, you know, Thor. Like these Julian are calendar. these are not Christian characters in the Bible, but right. It is a funny thing. But you had mentioned that your wife was from Africa.
Yeah. She's from Kenya. So in her tribe, they worship the god that lived on Mount Kilimanjaro. And this was way before it was colonized, that nation was colonized by the British, of course. And so Christianity and the missionaries came in, and now the national religion is Christianity. And they look down on their the religions of their ancestors as a whole. It's kind of a shameful thing to do. But some people do in secret, she was telling me. Some people still pay homage. They'll still trek up to Kilimanjaro they'll say it's just for, you know, well, heritage reasons.
Sure.
Not because we really believe it anymore.
But like that ancestral calling that sometimes feel that
it's just a way
for.
To connect with your, you know, culture or whatever.
I feel like the lack of a sense of identity is a considerable sense that we have. A lot of people say we have a sense, only five senses. I think we have way more than that. And I think that sense of belonging or the sense of identity or the idea of like, even if I'm gone, there'll still be a concept of me or something that I was supporting that will remain. Like that is a sense that we have for sure. George, I'd like to get your feedback on this. You were raised atheist, right? Do you feel like any part of your current identity had been hijacked by like a religion by any aspect, or do you feel absolved from all of that?
It's so much to this, really. As you may be able to tell from my accent, I'm from New York. And New York is unusual, I think, in the United States as not being founded on a religious basis. The city was founded for money. You know, it was the Dutch West India Company. It was strictly a corporate project. And if you've ever heard of the old mayor of New York City, Peter Stuyvesant, he was a middle-level corporate manager. And when the British came in and took over New York, which was simply like a stock trade with the Dutch, Stuyvesant went off to be a governor somewhere else, you know, for his company. So the place where I grew up did not have a religious heritage, let's say, the way I feel that Boston did or Philadelphia. And although I grew up in Brooklyn, which had been called the city of churches, I never saw any, you know. There weren't a whole bunch of churches around. There were some, but, you know, it wasn't like they were, like here where I live.
Sure, yeah, where there's one on every block.
There's one on every block, yeah. So, however, I feel whatever it's like Tyrone, my God, the cultural robbery that took place on your background.
Sure.
Is just so immense to me. And you know, I just think about like how many languages are spoken in Africa, you know, and Swahili is so beautiful. I mean, just the sound of that language.
Just to weigh in on what George was saying, yeah, I do feel like I have a missed opportunity, but I also feel like I am just as invested in the American project as any other color of skin that's here currently.
Yes, indeed.
But it's also an interesting thing that even that concept has only been around for 1900s, like the very, very early 1900s when the Chicago World Fair like was like established, like 1893-ish. Like we think like America has always been about Americana and Christopher Columbus and like all the four founding fathers and Mount Rushmore and stuff. Like that stuff is new on the grand scheme of things. Like those are fairly new institutions that were raised, brought up, funded, built, and instilled in children as things that are part of America. Whereas there were people already here, there was a culture that was already here. And I remember I was at the gym this morning and I was seeing like a PBS cartoon show about
a bunch of Native American little kids playing with a bunch of friends and talking and about, like, you know, the great things about Native American culture. And I'm watching this and I'm like, this is brilliant stuff that's been here since we've been here, or even longer than any of us have been here, or my culture has been brought over here. So we reach out for stuff, and if we can't find it, we'll invent it. And that's the new hijack, like the way how we can just make culture and force feed that as the new truth. And we can see that even affecting us today with, like, how easy it is to just give fake news out and for people to just accept that as fact and then move on with it. But I don't want to go off too far off topic. Boudreaux, I'd like to give you the same question. Do you feel in your upbringing, because I know it wasn't, like, you know, aggressively religious, but, like, did you find any parts of your upbringing hijacked as you grew up? Like, hey, why do I think that? Who gave?
Yeah. No, good question. So I was raised Catholic. My mom was Catholic, but my dad is an atheist, and he didn't identify to us as an atheist until we were older. Hmm. And I think it was something he did kind of out of respect to not influence us, maybe. Which is interesting, because I'm not sure that it would have terribly, because I was kind of coming into atheism on my own.
Right.
So I don't know. I kind of felt like it was maybe kind of unfairly dishonest to, you know, to not know early on that my dad was atheist. But, I've thought a lot about how to introduce religion to my children. So I don't fault them for it at all. It's plus that was in the 70s. So it's a bit different than today.
Absolutely.
So, where did you grow up?
I'm sorry.
Where did you grow up?
Wisconsin, north of Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I moved to Kentucky when I was about 15, 14.
The uncle that raised me, grew up in the Green Bay area.
Green Bay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's more where my dad was from. But a bit north, more north. But
his last name is English. Did you know, run into any Englishes?
No, I'm not sound
with blue eyes. No,
blue eyes.
Identity, no.
No, he's
they like to wear hunter hats marriage. And
he's,
like
he's by marriage though.
And Argyle sweaters. No, you don't know that. Okay.
I do love the. Oh, you work at UK? Hey, you know those? There's
Oh, you're from Kentucky. Do you know the Thompsons? I get that too.
But my mom is from Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, in Canada. So she's Canadian. What I always thought was interesting, and maybe this kind of ties slightly into what we're saying, sure, is my mom's family is very Italian. I think maybe they're from Sicily. But my grandfather's name is Joe Bumbacco, and he was number 7 because there were so many Bumbaccos in the Sault Ste. Marie area, or the Sioux as they call it. And we would go up there and I would just see Italians, dark hair and cooking all kinds of food. For the longest time, I thought Canada was Italian. Like when people, French Canadian, like I was like, no,
Canada.
It's not French. It's Italian. Like, so my view of Canada was this small town that was very, very Italian. So.
Scott, did you want to weigh in?
Oh no. I was just going to ask a question. It seems like with, more African cultures, Christianity seems to be really, really accepted, and like there's never a problem with that. But like I notice now in
America, depends where you are, but yeah,
right. Well, I mean, other than like Muslim or
Because if you're in northern Nigeria, it's almost like that won't fly.
Yeah, it's like the cultural gods. If you weren't colonized, you know, or if you were colonized, then that would be. That's never a consideration almost like it's, but then in America, there's more of, a push to, reclaim, you know, the, African, traditions, like religious, spiritual traditions, at least it seems like it these days more so.
Maybe.
I always wonder why is that?
I don't know. You're probably gonna have to find some black people to ask. I don't know.
Well, I'm asking. No,
I would say this. We say Christian, but Christianity in Africa is a completely different beast than Christianity as we think of it in the Western point of view. And there's no way a white Jesus would fly when you call him Jesus Christ in the areas I'm familiar with where Christianity is popular in Africa. And so it is an interesting thing. They also look suspiciously Italian, Jesus, or Canadian, as Eric would say. And that's something that's more cultural hijacking, like the image of Jesus and what he looks like. JW Kennedy, have you been hijacked? You wanted to make some points too. What do you think?
Well, fun fact, I'm sure quite a few of you already know this. Most of the pictures and paintings of Jesus are actually paintings of one of the Pope's nephews.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, he had a great six pack, apparently. Well, either that or he just keeps drawing them in.
Apparently, yeah. You can just Google it and you can see pictures of the Pope's nephew beside pictures of Jesus. And then there's some sort of articles. There's a few articles on the history of that. But
now, JW, you actually do have a poignant story as far as hijacking is concerned. It does, religion did have a big impact in your life.
It did. It was actually a very unhealthy obsession for the first 8 years of my adult life. But I prayed this prayer at the beginning, around 18 or 19 years old. I said, God, I want to know you for who you are, not for who I want you to be, not for who I've been taught you to be, but for who you are. And I want to know the truth for what it is, not for what I want it to be, not for what I've been taught it to be, but for what it is. And at the time I was open to entertain the possibility of being raised in the wrong denomination. But soon this motto, this creed actually ended. It took me to a journey that actually I ended up leaving religion altogether. But I went from being raised Southern Baptist to more of a liberal Baptist in high school to, I was into Calvinism, but it's
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know
how
much. I don't know how much you guys know about Calvinism. Its main belief is that God controls absolutely everything and there's no free will. It tries to fit that into the biblical narrative, which doesn't work. You can't really fit reality into any type of biblical narrative. But anyway, I went from there to an even smaller denomination of Christianity called Messianic Judaism, and what they called the Hebrew Roots Movement, which most American Christians consider a cult because we believed that we should still keep the commandments of Moses along with believing Jesus is the Messiah. And in their defense, we had so many more verses to support our doctrine than American Christians do theirs. And I learned in that, this is where the main point comes in with cultural robbing. I learned in that movement, in that denomination, about an emperor called Constantine that I really don't believe. I think it would be very challenging for Christianity to exist today in the West if Constantine didn't do what he did. Right. He basically Christianized pagan holidays. I think he beheaded some of his family members.
The national religion of Italy at the time.
He's the one that made Christmas Christian. He's the one that made Easter Christian. And they tried to make Halloween Christian by calling it Jesus Ween, but it really didn't stick.
Jesus Ween.
I fool you not.
Right.
Wow.
So
another example how it hijacks it.
Yeah, if you celebrated Easter or if you celebrated, you know, like Valentine's Day or Christmas at 25th of December, you're a victim, not a victim, but you have been affected by hijacking. It's just
it's the winter solstice. You know, they hijacked it for Christmas and Easter was hijacked the spring solstice.
Santa's first elf was a demon called, oh God, what was his name?
How do we get
demon-like creature called the
Krampus.
Krampus. There it is.
There you go. Buffalo. Speaking of wings, how do you feel if hijacking has affected your life in any capacity? Where do you think it's come from? How would you describe it?
Well, I don't think I've suffered very much from it because I'm a first generation American. My father immigrated to this country when he was 19 because he didn't have enough to eat back in Romania. But he brought his culture with him. And so until I was 4 years old, I spoke nothing but Hungarian at home.
Oh. So,
very strong cultural basis. And we were, you know, joined with, we lived in a neighborhood with other Hungarians, bordered by a neighborhood that was rich with Polish people and all the wonderful things they've contributed. And I have a very strong background. So I don't feel like I've lost very much myself. Now, that maybe the downside is that I haven't passed very much of that on to my children, and I feel guilty about that.
Well, certainly the food, the meals, Kristen, my wife, Buffalo's daughter, cooks a lot of Hungarian meals still to this day, and my kids love them.
Okay.
Yeah. Kapusta and,
It's like the idea of competing cultures are always going to be a thing, even if you aren't affected by them. Just the pressures of other cultures around you can make it such that it's hard to pass down your culture, because it's going to compete with what's the day-to-day for everybody else in their lives. And so I can see that as a really sad point.
As soon as I went to English-speaking school, I didn't want to have anything to do with the language anymore. You know, I felt
it's very hard to rap in Hungarian. So yeah, I'll give you that. Yeah, you might want to just...
Yeah, it is. Long words.
It's very long words. It's like, I have too many syllables and not enough notes.
but on the religious side,
I was like, how do I do this?
On the religious side, I was raised as a Catholic, and I was an altar boy for many, many years, and all that stuff. But my father basically said, believe in God, but think for yourself.
Okay.
From the get-go. So I haven't really... When I got to the point where I was thinking by myself, and I had his support in a number of instances where there was a conflict between the biblical version and real life, he would just say, well, what do you think you should do?
I'm going to ask this question, and then we'll give it to Larry, and we'll get back to like a full roundtable when we come back after the break. But Buffalo, question for you. You said, I don't really feel like I lost a lot of culture. I hang with Hungarians all the time in my neighborhood. I'm good. If you actually went back to Hungary, like right now, or if you went to Hungary right now, would you feel like the odd man out? Would people look at you and be like, oh, look at this American guy in his Buffalo hat and Buffalo t-shirt. And he thinks he can cook America. He thinks he cooks our food. No. Let me show you what a borscht looks like, you American boy. Like, do you feel like that's happened yet?
Well, I did that. I went back with my dad. Maybe 15 years ago, and visited the poor village that he was raised in. And I could still speak a little bit to the people, so I wasn't considered to be that much of a stranger. Okay. But I think they looked upon us, my father and I included, or both of us, as rich people.
Mm.
But I think we were very much accepted. And so there wasn't very much strangeness about it.
Okay. But not bad. Larry, I want to hear what your perspective is on hijacking, because it's probably going to take like 20 minutes anyway.
Well, I'll save you the time. You can go to my website, my blog, and read buy my book and read the chapter on it, How Religion Hijacks Everything. It talks about how it hijacks the holidays and your culture, history, your family, how they try to get you to call the priest father, and the people in your church, brothers and sisters, and they tell you if your family doesn't want to follow you into the religion, a lot of times they'll tell you to leave your family behind, and you know, just a lot of hijacking going on. It's like I say, I've written a whole chapter on it. Go to digitalfreethought.com/blog and read all about it.
Nice. I also found that words in our normal lexicon can be hijacked by religions as well. Mm-hmm. Like, even the word, I was trying to sing the song Chariot in my mom's house, who's a Jehovah's Witness. She's like, don't sing that. That's a Christian song. I'm like, one, it's not. That's a love song by Gavin DeGraw. It's not a big deal. It's like, Chariot is a Christian word, and I'm a Jehovah's Witness. And I'm like, that doesn't even make sense. It's just a thing that horses pull. Mm-hmm. But it's been so connotized, and Lord really has been connotized. There's a lot of words that we feel like owned by other people, but they aren't. And we should fight when that idea is brought up. Like, we own family, we own belief. Like, it doesn't, we're not non-believers. We believe in things too.
Right.
It's just, we don't believe in a God. That's it. Things to think about. Larry, why don't you take us out?
Sure. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we'll be right back after this short break.
Hell, hell, I want to go to hell. It seems a really fun place to play. But I got to do what's right and do it every day if I want to go to hell someday. Oh, hell, I want to go to hell. So I got to do what mom and dad say. I got to love my neighbor even if they are gay.
Hello and welcome back to the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Dotter 5 and we're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today's Sunday, January 31st, 2021. Let's talk about the atheist and free thought groups that you can join here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK. Founded in 2002, we're going into our 19th year. ASK has over 1,000 members, and we meet weekly on Zoom. And during this COVID, we used to meet, of course, in person, but can't do that anymore. You can find us online at Facebook or go to KnoxvilleAtheist.org. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to meet up and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one. Start one. That's right. Another, earlier in the show, we said we'd talk about the atheist video show. Well, it was originally called Free Thought Forum Knoxville, and you can go to YouTube and search for those words and find their archives. But currently, they're under the name of Free Thinkers United Coalition of Knoxville, also on YouTube. If you're interested in getting involved with this TV or radio show, just come to an Ask Meetup, go to our webpage, our Facebook page, or an RET page, the Rationalists of East Tennessee. You can find them at rationalists.org and tell us you want to be part of our video or radio shows. With us on the show today, we have Doubtfire, George, Boudreaux, J.W. Kennedy, Buffalo, and of course, Wombat and myself.
Nice.
Daughter 5. Where do we want to pick up there, Wombat?
So Buffalo was giving us Hungarian lessons in Hungarian. So this is something I've always wondered. I know only one Hungarian word. It's for a common household object. Can you translate this back into English, Buffalo? The word is ventilator.
Ventilator. No, I cannot. I'll find it up for you, though.
Let me Google translate it. It's for fan. What a fan, what a fan, what a fan, what a mighty good fan.
What a mighty, what a mighty, mighty, mighty good fan.
Nice job, guys.
Well played, Wombat.
Why is it always a surprise? That's what I want to know. Why is it always a surprise? All right, so last week's episode was, is slavery wrong? Let me check my book. And we were talking to Elmo, who was a guest on the show, a Christian. And what was interesting about him was that very polite, very welcoming, but very standard in terms of like the beliefs of Christianity. But I also feel like if it wasn't as staunch as someone who knows the Bible so well and is coming up with apologetics for it, it's more of like, oh, does it really say that? Oh, well, I never read anything like that. It seems like he's the kind of person that just needs to be critical when he's being exposed to some of the things that made us turn away from the Bible in the first place. One of them being slavery. And so DK66 says, it's a sad day whenever there's a person of color who defends slavery on the internet. And I get the point of view. Essentially, it's like when we asked him, like, hey, was slavery wrong? He's like, well, I'd have to see it on a case-by-case basis, which is really unfortunate, especially ironic in that it was in a conversation framed around him questioning our morality as atheists. And it's like in every case, we would say owning people as property is wrong. There's no explicit nature where that's an okay thing. It's always morally wrong. So Dada's Trading Room, friend of the show, many times commenter, gave us a really, really long comment. And so basically, well, I'll do this. I'll tell you what, Dada's Trading Room. I'm gonna read over this, and then towards the end of the show, I'll get everyone's feedback on this. But it's essentially about morality and the nature of how theists and people who aren't religious can parse the two, whereas you know, theists will have to rely on what their God tells them, whereas people who don't can figure it out for themselves. And even if they reach the same conclusion, it proves that you don't need the God route because you can totally do it on your own. And I think that's the main point. We were talking about cultural hijacking. We had a really nice conversation during the mid-show break. I want to return to it just a little bit. The idea of, hey, you know, these things that I hold, these things that I believe in, these were beliefs that were given to me by other people. J.W. Kennedy, you were talking about Constantine, right?
Yes.
There were a lot of other impactful people that colored basically what was even in the biblical book in the first place, like the meeting of Nicaea. Is that how you refer to it? Like the people who
Nicaea. There were like the council that basically decided what books should and shouldn't be, and it was by majority vote. You know, I always, you know, we're taught in the American church that, you know, the Bible was given to us by God and it was brought together by the Holy Spirit and decided, and yet it went through all these processes of, you know, Catholics have more books than Orthodox. You know, than Protestants do, and then there are some Christians who only read the New Testament. There are denominations like the Church of Christ who just completely throw out the Old Testament altogether when it comes to doctrine. It's just my issue. This is one of the reasons in the list why I left and decided that it was just more rational to believe that there was no personal God involved in Christianity is that if there was, do you think that what's supposed to be the most important thing, his word, what he gives to us and what he tells us is right and wrong, how a man is supposed to be saved and all those things that were preached to about. And yet he did. There is no evidence, zero evidence throughout history that he made any action to protect it from corruption.
Yeah.
So it's, you know.
What about them Dead Sea Scrolls? Scott, you know those Dead Sea Scrolls. That proves everything. What about that?
That's right. Those Dead Sea Scrolls, man. They were authored by a Jewish sect that was trying to escape cultural hijacking, I think it could be argued, because they were a group called the Essenes.
Wow, you know your history, dude.
Yeah, they lived on the outskirts of Palestine in the hills area, in the wilderness, so to speak. And they wrote down prophecies and wrote down copies of, you know, the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible that they had. And, you know, they were considered heretical by the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And I think there are even some arguments that John the Baptist was a Essene, because he came from the wilderness dressed in, animal coverings, just like the Essenes did.
Yeah.
And the Essenes practiced this new thing called baptism,
which is kind of interesting. Hey, Boudreau, what do you got?
Just pointing out the irony here, maybe others see it too, but we're talking about these scrolls that were uncovered and science was used to, you know, 3D modeling to unravel them and read them and translate them and all this. And just there's a bit of irony that we're having to use science to make things more.
Should be apparent.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow. Now apparent. Yeah. Totally. George, I'm gonna head to you real quick, just so everyone gets a chance to feed in on this. But like the idea of like, okay, so you found a really old document. So what? Why should I care? Why should I even take that seriously? Like, you can tell me Dead Sea Scrolls. You can tell me Council of Nicaea came together and came up with a series of books. But why do I care? Why should I care?
Well, sometimes I ask myself these questions. Because I would like to understand what these deluded people all around me believe, because I live surrounded by them and they baffle the hell out of me, you know, and they have a really strong influence over how I experience my life.
You know, that's true.
But I keep trying, and I'm very unsuccessful at this because I try to read the Bible and I keep falling asleep.
George, you made a great point. Even if you are raised atheist, even if you don't believe in a God, even to your senior years, being in America, means that you are living in the effect of a Christian shadow, more or less.
Well, because, don't forget, too, that my background is Jewish on top of this.
Ah, that's, yeah, then that has an effect as well, too.
Okay, so, I mean, my mother and father were raised in the Jewish tradition, one of the Jewish traditions, and to tell you the truth, I'm not quite sure which one, but so I feel very baffled, for instance, here in my town where I live. As the county seat, it's got a bunch of supermarkets. And two of these supermarkets, the expensive ones, have Jewish food kiosks.
Okay.
And yet the only Jewish religious facilities I can find around here are the phony ones. You know, the evangelical Jews. They're not Jews. I don't know what they are, but, you know. They're not any kind of Jews that I grew up around, so because they didn't exist when I was a kid. Jews for Jesus is a you know, a relatively new phenomenon. So,
but you did. I guess my takeaway was, like, even if you're far removed from religion growing up, you still feel the effects of it because the people who decide the rules in this country have religious backing. Have to appeal themselves to religious lobbyists and stuff like that. JW, you raise your hand. What's up?
Well, a moment's kind of passed now.
Go for it. You can bring it back.
Well, I've heard of Jews for Jesus, and I did read some of their material when I was religious. Well, I was just going to say, to the baptism thing, it was actually an evolved ritual. The original ritual was called mikveh, and it was a pool that they put outside of the temple that you're supposed to immerse yourself in before you go and enter the presence of God, which it's supposed to be some sort of cleanliness thing, but it's clearly a placebo. I mean, think about how standing water, where hundreds, maybe thousands of people go there to just immerse themselves. That's going to be the most disgusting cesspool.
Oh my God.
Thinking about it because of COVID, but yeah, there used to be a time where you could shake people's hands and be like, oh, this isn't normal. Yeah.
Why is it green? Oh, it's the spirit of God.
Yeah, you know, they're kissing each other. Don't they know about germs? Did they?
Well, with the Essenes, the baptism was just required for a change of heart. It didn't really mean anything more than that. But I think with John the Baptist, it was a sign of, you know, being liberated from your sin, and I'm sure it went.
Yeah, I think he was one of the first to do the mikveh outside of the temple area, like in a river somewhere. That's what I was just saying.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I'm going to double
that. That was pre Lister and Pasteur, and people didn't identify with germs and disease, and so
yeah,
that can sort of be excused, I think.
So I'm going to devil's advocate. I'm going to throw this one out to Larry. I actually think that cultural hijacking has made it easier to be an atheist, because we know how easy it is for someone who's about to be an atheist to just be like, well, I'm spiritual. I'm just going to pick the next culturally acceptable thing. So I don't have to be a label atheist. I can still say I'm religious, but I can at least pick the next thing, Buddhist, crystal, universal connection, all that stuff to make you feel good and warm and not look like an outsider.
But the buffet of religions around the world, you can pick the one that currently suits your spirituality, as it were.
But cultural hijacking has been like, we're going to take all these gods, take them off the table and just make it one thing. It's the one thing. And that way atheists can just be like, well, your one thing doesn't make any sense. You're right. One thing, and then it's like, oh, you made this somewhat simple, because every, like, it's the most popular one. It's like, wow, like, if I don't believe in this one thing, I'm 70% not on board with like more than half of the religions around the world. That's great. You've made my job so much easier as an atheist.
Well, a lot of times you'll talk to deists and they'll say, you know, I believe in a God because I want to believe in a God.
I've heard that.
At least they're honest, you know, they're just telling you up front, you know, it's something I want to believe in. Yep. And there's no reason not to, they say. So, okay. Deism doesn't, I don't have a problem with that, because it doesn't have any dogma. It doesn't have a book telling you what you should or not do and not to do. It doesn't have any commandments. But it still allows you to think that a supernatural being created the universe. We don't know anything about that being. He doesn't care about us or keep an eye on us or anything. Of course, we wouldn't know. But there's no dogma, so it doesn't interfere in our lives, per se.
I would add a biological element here.
Go for it.
I believe in belief genes. Yeah, and I think that we have propensities, and beliefs are part of those propensities. So everything in science, right, or just about everything, is on a Gaussian curve.
And
so that means a distribution, a variation, and ultimately in a biological organism, that means differences in the DNA. And so there's no reason for me not to believe that there are people who have sets of DNAs not yet identified, not yet connected with belief or propensity to believe, and that these people have more of the expression of those genes than, for example, I do.
And therefore, that's
the context I put.
So you're saying it's nature. It could be nature, not nurture. But I personally believe it's more nurture. But
I wish it was as natural to question and challenge our own beliefs as it is to believe something.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know, Richard Dawkins was the one that he came up with a hypothesis that, you know, because magical thinking, you know, like when our early ancestors in the bush saw the rustling of the bushes, you either thought it was some spooky demon behind the bush that was out to get you, or it could be the wind. And those who thought it was the demon behind the bush would run away, and those people could live to talk about it. Whereas the science-minded people says, oh, we don't know what it is, so there's no reason to run. And then they might have got eaten up by a lion or something like that. And so it just seems like we are the ancestor or the descendants of the people that ran away from the rustling of the bush. Yeah. So that magical thinking kind of got passed down through, you know, the generations to make us who we are. And we're all kind of prone to beliefs and magical thinking to some degree.
Well, we know other minds exist. I mean, we look around us, see other people and other writings, and we know animals have minds. So we tend to project them where they aren't as well. And we always look for an explanation. So what better explanation is that something or somebody is causing it?
That's right.
I also do think what Larry was saying, that the way you're nurtured has a huge impact on the way that your thought process operates. And I think, you know, no one's raised to be a misogynist. No one's raised to be racist. Those are things that you pick up from your environment. And one of the things I want to be absolutely clear about is like, the everyone is a little bit racist, and that's okay. From my opinion, it's like a salt. You put it on food, it makes jokes funnier, it makes movies like easier to deal with, keeps your blood pressure low. It's the people who put way too much salt on it. It's like, that's too much salt. It's like, well, my grandfather gave me this salt. It's like, that doesn't mean you gotta put it on everything. Calm down a little bit. So
I've never heard that analogy. I like it. It's pretty good.
And the flip side are the people who are like, well, I don't put salt on any of my food. It's like, well, you're just very boring. Like, I don't want to tell you anything. I don't eat your food. So like the people who say, like, I am not gullible because I'm genetically disposed not to be. That is something where it's like, hey, at least consider that the gullibility gene is right next to the self-delusion gene. And you want to make sure that you are at least aware that these two things have a really big impact. If one exists, it's likelihood that the other one exists. I don't know if there is a gullibility
thyself.
But I want to be aware that it's very easy to convince yourself that you're right in this world. Yeah. And that's just a really possible thing.
I think it's possible to transcend your natural inclinations to be tribal or to be a magical thinker or something like that. Cause I used to be a magical thinker, huge.
Same with me.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you just have to train yourself to be, skepticism isn't something that comes natural.
What is magical thinking?
Leading toward supernatural excuses to explain things that can't be tested, things that can't be falsified.
Basically explain things with no explanation. You know, God did it. That's not an explanation. Doesn't give us any information.
You give us an answer instead of an explanation.
Right.
I will tell you something that was really good. When I grew up, there was a show on Fox called The Masked Magician, where it would basically tell you how every magic trick was done. And I remember watching that show and I was like, this is ruining magic for me. But then when I realized how hard it was to do the trick, magic went from
it's skill.
Pure exactly. Magic went from like this weird, ambiguous, you know, entertainment to like, this guy's good. He did like the whole cart lift. He did a little pass pull here. There's probably a string there. This guy really is a good engineer. And I respect this on a technical level.
And at no point did his hands leave his arms.
Yeah, it's the same thing with me with science and learning about how reality works. Like when you really look into deep sciences and hard sciences and stuff like that. Like I used to think that science is ruining religion for me and it's ruining spirituality for me. But then when you really look at nature and reality and how things work and what we come to find out, it's actually a better story than religion.
It's so much better. Yeah.
Understanding is so much better than belief.
So Buffalo's inclined.
First of all, here we go. You go for it. It starts from modesty, and that is the scientist realize that he doesn't know, we don't know anything, absolutely everything about anything.
Exactly.
Sure.
That's and quite different from religion, isn't it? Or belief in a deity.
Absolutely. Buffalo, you made the point that you almost look to nature as if there was ever going to be a God worth worshiping, it would be nature. Is that something along the lines that you had mentioned before? Am I using those?
No, I think, first of all, on the believe and belief genes thing, it's a gradation. And I think we very, like, just like everything else, you take a single enzyme from your body and mine, and they're not exactly the same. There's variation, a great deal of variation. People are not one being, or as the doctors say, if we look so different on the outside, why do you expect us to be the same on the inside?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a gradation in all of this here. But I think, and if you believe that, then the extreme believer, the person that will believe in anything, is way at the end of the Gaussian curve, not at the exponential rise part of it. And the majority of people are in that 60% right. In the exponential rise. So everything's a gradation. That's why I think that nature does have a real part in this. Nurture, yes. And of course, they're all working back and forth with each other. But I really think that people that believe in have a high expression of sets of genes that are not yet identified.
I would love, given that we can identify the genes, they have not been identified and we don't have evidence for it. I would love to have that belief once I have a good reason to have that belief. Until then, I would feel like I'm in the same pool as Deus, where it's like, yeah, I want to believe this, but I have no evidence.
You would never believe it. And I would claim that I believe very, very little. I conclude I don't believe.
Well, Eric, what do you got?
Yeah, just kind of something got me thinking, and I'm having maybe slight internet issues, so apologize if I cut out.
No, you're right.
But maybe even in contrast to what you said, Wombat, earlier, something I read recently in thinking about raising children, right? I've got two young kids. How much of a role am I going to have on in the people they're going to be, you know, my nurture, what's the percentage of that versus the nature? And one of the podcasts I heard on this and something I've read really says, you know, a lot of it is nature. And then of course, with my thoughts on free will, all of the nurture that I'm giving for these kids,
you just lost him.
That's okay. He'll come right back. Keep going, okay. Eric.
Am I back? Okay, so the thought is the genes that my kids have is the nature side, and if you know my thoughts on free will, the nurture that I give these kids, I'm not actually in control of. They come from my genes, so it kind of feels like most of it, 90%, something like that, is what I hear is nature.
Yeah, I'm always wary of the idea that we are fundamentally different from each other. When we can see from this COVID vaccine, we can see from just the human condition itself that we are far more similar than we are desperately, you know, distinct. And so it's not a question of ingrained potential of like, who can learn more? Who could be a better president? Should these groups of people who have these sets of, you know, sexual organs be better at leading people than compared to other people? It's like, no, I think if we invest in the society where we treat people as equals and give everyone free opportunities to learn and take the vocations that they want to work for and foster curiosity and critical thinking, anybody can do anything. And so I love the idea of like, if someone is gullible, critical thinking can make them skeptical. If someone doesn't know how to change out a carburetor on a car, you know, a half hour YouTube video can probably teach them how to do that exactly. And it's not so much a genetic loss, it's just a question of, can we invest the time nature as a society to get them on board with, you know, asking the right questions. And anybody can do that. And so I think if anything, if there is that genetic, you know, limitation, nature is the thing that can take us, the nurturing is the thing that can take us past any sort of limit. JW, what do you got?
This is kind of spooky. I didn't meet my father until I was 24 years old. And when I met him, everybody on my father's family was really, it was just really strange because I sat like he did. I had my personality was very similar to his. I had not met him in my whole life until I was 24. My BMI was body mass index was very similar to his. And so I think there's a lot more to be learned where the whole nature nurture is concerned. It puzzles me. I don't know why that is, but without meeting him, even some of his habits.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow, you know,
epigenetics. Epigenetics is a fascinating field.
I would agree that if you share the same phenotype, what's comfortable for your dad to do through force of habit would probably most likely be what's comfortable for you to do as well. Though I don't think you would have the same fashion sense. I think that's uniquely yours, JW. Cool. Congrats on that. Boudreau, where's your podcast at, man? Where can we find your stuff at?
Man, we're being lazy with our podcast. We did record one. We're fighting over who's going to edit it. But we're also talking about doing another one. But I will have the song. I think we're at our final mix for our original song.
Nice.
I should have that for you soon. That was fun. And then last comment on cultural hijack. Every Christmas I think about this, but Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah is always paraded around as this Christmas song and this religious song. And it's just not. It's dark.
About sex.
Isn't White Christmas the same thing too? It's like a deliberately secular Christmas song, but people don't realize that.
Mm-hmm. Hijack.
Buffalo, last word on nature nurture. What do you got?
Well, I would just say that again, it's a gradation. I don't think you can take any single trait and put it in the nature column or the nurture column. They're inseparable, but I really think that some people have more propensity to express one side than the other. And maybe it changes with age because too, I find myself thinking and about things much more the way my dad did, the older I get. Maybe that's because I'm 77 years old now, and so that may have something to do with it too. But things change. Everything's changed. Everything's on a variable scale. These things we're talking about are on a tremendous variable scale.
Nice.
That's why I hate secular religion so much. Is, you know, how can you believe something that's been so divvied up?
George, what's something we should check out by next week?
By next week, huh?
By next week. Yeah. What's one thing you think we should check out by next week?
Well, I like a book called Tales of the Dervishes by Idris Shah. It's Sufi teaching stories. Each one has a hidden message. I like that.
Very cool. Larry, you can, before I hand it to you, my Let's Chat, you can find my stuff on YouTube. You're probably watching this already. Feel free to leave a comment. We'll go over it during next week's show. Larry?
My own content is on digitalfreethought.com. Be sure to click on the blog button for our radio show archives, our atheist songs, and many articles on the subject of atheism. My book is called Atheism.
Wait, What's you wrote a book? Like? Why don't you tell us anything about it? Larry.
If you wonder about atheism.
You keep writing books about cell phones and cough drops. I want to know about atheism. Have you wrote a book about atheism? Can you tell me what it's about? Like, is there anything like that?
It's called Atheism. What's it all about? It's available on Amazon. if you have questions for the show, you can send them to askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org. If you're having trouble with leaving your religious beliefs behind, you can go to recoveringfromreligion.org. If you're watching this show on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. This has been Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life, and we'll see you next week. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Bye.